you know, she was called upon very early on to lead. And so as a young child, I saw her do things that were kind of the unthinkable. I saw her do 2 and 3 jobs at one time. I saw her come home and make dinner every single night. I saw her go to plays and to the things that matter to us. I saw her help me with homework that she didn't understand herself, because she never took trigonometry and algebra. They didn't teach that in the antebellum South. And so for me, having seen her do things in her own life that that defied the odds, I knew that what I didn't have in advantages, I could make up with effort.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you listeners out there. We have another fantastic episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson, and my guest today does not necessarily fit the archetype of many of our past guests. While not an entrepreneur, a founder, Tony Murphy is not only a vice president in Comcast Business, but is a mentor to hundreds of people throughout her organization. She has successfully transitioned through multiple high-stress, high-responsibility roles in investment banking and in different parts of Comcast's corporate structure. And in today's conversation, we talk about how she goes about leading her team, advice she has for folks that are trying to navigate their own corporate structure, and how she learned to prioritize and develop skills in time management by working 80, 90, and 100-hour weeks in investment banking. I walked away not only inspired by Tony's passion and energy, but I really appreciated how articulately she could explain her philosophy around leading her team. In addition to her role as VP, Tony is also one of the heads of diversity and inclusion at Comcast, and she lays out a fantastic challenge at the end towards that aim. So please enjoy this really fun conversation with Tony Murphy.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Tony, welcome to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
I'm excited to be talking with you. And I was thinking of how to start off this interview, and I came up with a pretty decent question.
All right.
So you were in investment banking at UBS, working 80, 90, 100-hour weeks.
You bet.
You're now a VP at Comcast and a mother of 3 kids.
That's right.
Which one requires a higher degree of time management?
Oh my God. That's a great question. I like that you started off that way.
Yeah.
I certainly think being a mother of 3 very small children, 7, 5, and 3 years old, I have to have much more time management now today, along with this big job, than I did in investment banking. It was a lot easier when it was just me. I could kind of manage my time the way I thought. But certainly when you got 3 young people who are expecting a lot of you, who have activities and school, and then I have a very, very big job with a very big team. So I think now I absolutely need way more time management today than I did, you know, 10 years ago.
I'm sure that played a big part, though, in just giving you kind of those basic skills of understanding your time and prioritizing.
Absolutely. Well, in investment banking, I mean, our clients are large corporations that have big transactions on the line. I worked on IPOs and M&A opportunities where they were going to buy another company. And you could probably imagine we were working with the CEOs and COOs, and they have specific deadlines to meet to be able to hit the market. And so when I was an investment banking analyst, we had very strict deadlines. So that meant that there were some nights where I literally slept under my desk to get a little bit of rest, but then get up and get going because a customer or a client was waiting for us.
Gotcha. So was in that environment, were you more or less, not on an island, but like it was kind of sink or swim by each individual? Would you say that's a pretty fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of, well, first of all, it is an individual sport. I mean, yeah. They're very clear with you when you first get into investment banking that you're going to go as far as you believe you can go. And so there are times where you're individually working on a model or working with a client presentation, and it's really all about you. It's really about you understanding what the client needs and putting it together. But there's also elements of investment banking that was a team sport, meaning that everybody had their individual work to do. It's kind of like being on a basketball team. You have a forward and a guard. Everybody knows that they have a role to play and that ultimately if we work well together, we're going to get to the ultimate outcome. But if you have one weak link, that could lead to disastrous outcomes for the customer. And we're talking billions and billions of dollars of transactions. So every little Excel number, every little presentation really did matter.
Absolutely. So one of the things we explore a lot on this show is how some of the initial steps set you up for the subsequent moves. And even if you don't necessarily go in anticipating what that move will be, the connections, the skills, the experiences translate into that. So can you talk a little bit about the connective tissue between starting investment banking and entering Comcast and where you are now?
Well, the best story I'll tell you was when I was an investment banking analyst. So let me just give context. I graduated from Princeton with a finance, an economics and French degree. I had never taken an actual finance course in my entire life at Princeton. I literally went to Wall Street assuming that I would eventually, learn what I needed to learn. I was in an analyst class with people who went to, Wharton Business School as an undergrad. So they came in with those foundations. Blocks. When I took on the role, I was a little skittish. I was a little afraid to take on the work. I found myself second guessing myself. And my managing director at the time, his name was Jeff Sein. When I was working on a project with him, I'll never forget, it was a Friday afternoon, and he piled more and more work on my desk. And I was feeling very overwhelmed and felt a little bit like sink or swim, back to what you said earlier. And he pulled me into his office and he said, let me just give you one piece of advice that's going to be really important for you in your career. You're not here to take sides, you're here to take over. So when I give you more work, understand that I am giving you every opportunity to show what you're capable of, and I'm going to help you sharpen your skills. So from day one, when I was an investment banking, I learned the importance of, first of all, learning to ask questions, not to be afraid of admitting that I didn't know things I didn't know. Very early on, I learned the importance of tackling each opportunity or every task individually, getting it great down to the last decimal point or period. And the other things that I learned was, the importance of pulling my head up and recognizing I have people that are supporting and hoping to help me get better at my craft and leaning on them to help me get better. And so in a roundabout way, what I would tell you is that what I know to be true in my role here at Comcast is that you have to be organized. You've got to be willing to ask questions. You got to lean on leaders. You've got to build a great coalition of people around you to help you be successful. But you also have to be humble and open to know when you've made a mistake or you've made a misdirection. And I'm grateful that Jeff was the person who planted that seed in me, because now in my current role, I'm the first one to raise my hand saying, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's helped me take on roles that I never, my whole background is taking on roles that I never was, quote, the most, equipped to take on, because I didn't have that skill set. I've never sold anything a day in my life, but now I lead a sales team. I never did project management, but I owned a project management team in my as a VP previously to this role. So what I love about my early training was that take on the risk, learn, take on so many different things. If you take on more, you'll learn more, and people will rally around you if you're open to the feedback.
That line of, you're not here to take sides, you're here to take over. Yeah. Have you ever found yourself repeating that and being like, whoa, I'm on the other side of the table?
Absolutely.
Now?
I can't tell you how many. I mean, here at Comcast, the running joke around here is that I mentor at least 100 people.
Yeah.
And so I'm constantly repeating that, because I have a lot of employees and a lot of compatriots here who are waiting for some magical moment for them to step into themselves. And I say, the best advice I can give anybody is that, what are you waiting on in terms of your promotional opportunity? What I've done in my career is when I see a gap, I fill it. If I see something going wrong, I fill it. If I see somebody needing some help, I raise my hand. And so that's what Jeff was trying to illustrate to me, is that you have every capacity to do everything that you want to do. It's about you stepping into yourself, you asking for help, and you rallying the troops to help you get to where you want to go. And so for me, when I talk to the young folks here or even the folks who are trying to make a transition from where they are to somewhere else, I'm constantly saying to them, you know, take on more, you know, look for where there's gaps in the business. That's how you'll be create an opportunity for yourself, or you're going to find a way to, you know, get your point across.
This high sense of self-efficacy that I'm seeing with you is clearly that piece of advice in the investment banking world was helpful, but you already had that. You already had gotten to Princeton. You already gotten into the investment banking world. That clearly already existed within you. Where does that come from?
Oh, gosh. So it's important to know that, you know, I come from a very big family. My mother is one of the oldest of 10 children. She grew up in rural Louisiana, you know, post Jim Crow and post civil rights, and actually pre and post civil rights. And, you know, she graduated high school with a young baby, my sister. And so, you know, from a very, you know, what I know about my mother's story is that she came from very little. She grew up in a house that was three rooms where you had basically 12 people living. And as the older of many children, she was, you know, she was called upon very early on to lead. And so as a young child, I saw her do things that were kind of the unthinkable. I saw her do 2 and 3 jobs at one time. I saw her come home and make dinner every single night. I saw her go to plays and to the things that matter to us. I saw her help me with homework that she didn't understand herself, because she never took trigonometry and algebra. They didn't teach that in the antebellum South. And so for me, having seen her do things in her own life that defied the odds, I knew that what I didn't have in advantages, I could make up with effort. And so, you know, the greatest example of my mother was when I was a kid, I loved New Kids on the Block, and I wanted the New Kids on the Block, you know, block bedspread that all my friends had, and we couldn't afford it. And I'll never forget my mother over that Christmas. She stayed up all night long, and she took basically some old fabric she found at a store. She found some batting behind it, and she made that bedspread, and she made curtains, and she made pillows, and she made all those different things. And that has stuck out in my memory as someone who, she didn't want to disappoint you. She knew she couldn't do it financially, but she was going to find a way anyway. And so I've always carried that New Kids on the Block story as a great example of what perseverance can do for you over advantages.
That's amazingly inspiring. I'm like fired up right now just sitting here with you. But one of the things, so my story is certainly not the same, but I have a similar story of parents coming from lower income to kind of emerge to upper middle class. And the experience of hearing that story kind of rung in your ears, like, this is what we had to do to make this happen.
That's right.
Resonate very much with carrying that with me. But what sometimes is difficult, and I can imagine you run into this in a larger organization, is other folks that don't necessarily have the self-efficacy, who have that kind of story ingrained in them from an early stage, trying to make an adjustment as a leader, as a coach, as a mentor, like you said, when, you know, some people are just, they're chomping at the bit. Give it to me. Give me the advice, Tony, help me.
Yeah.
But other folks that kind of need that kick in the butt, what advice can you give in terms of making that, applying that kind of pressure to someone who doesn't necessarily have that same degree of self-efficacy?
So what I try to, I believe everybody comes from different walks of life and different experiences, some great, some terrible. But what binds us all is snatching, you know, defeat, you know, getting rid of defeat when there's an opportunity to have victory. I think everyone has a story of when they didn't meet their own expectations or something didn't go right. I would love to know that there's somebody in this world that didn't have something that didn't go right in their lives. And so what I try to pull out from every person that I engage with is, what is your story? What are those moments where, you know, that you didn't see something, you didn't see things happen the way you wanted them to? Play back to yourself, talk to yourself in a way that, you know, that helps you see what's possible. I try to, in every conversation, I try to glean out what the learnings are from the different individual stories that sit in the back of your memory bank. Because if we're able to reach people as people and to draw upon the experiences that have made them who they are, then that is how you can trigger them to move forward. Every person, no matter whether you're wealthy or poor, or you've every person has had a story or a moment where they second-guessed themselves, or they didn't reach their ultimate outcome, or they didn't feel good enough. And so for me, if we are able to tap into that and to remind people of who they are, then I think you can get them, you can draw out of them the possibilities to get motivated. In my everyday, I get out in the I go out in the field, we call it in the field, with some of my sales rep. I get in the car with them and I say to them, tell me your story. What makes you you? What matters to you? The more we're able to do that, I think you'll see people stand up taller, because ultimately we're all here on this earth to prove that we were who we were supposed to be. And so no matter where your starting line was, it could be a little further ahead, a little bit back. Either way, you're trying to prove something about, you know, who you are. And I think if we can glean that out, we can drive great outcomes.
The Going Deep podcast is underwritten by Piper Creative. Shooting, editing, and publishing quality content is overwhelming. We make it easy so you can save time, build your brand, and grow faster. Say hello at pipercreative.co.
Folks that will be seeing the video on YouTube will see we've got Comcast Business in the background.
Sure.
This is a really staggeringly large organization, more than 160,000 people. You've, as different roles that you've held within Comcast, been in Philadelphia, in Chicago, you're in Pittsburgh now. Why are you in Pittsburgh? Yeah. What are these sales reps that you're leading, selling?
So I've been at the company 10 years. I've been across, literally done a lap here at Comcast. You know, when the opportunity came to be a part of Pittsburgh, I jumped at it for a multitude of reasons. First of all, I had never visited Pittsburgh before I moved here. All I knew about Pittsburgh was it was steel country. Everybody loves the Steelers, black and yellow. But I'll tell you, from the minute I got off the plane until now, I have really appreciated that this city in particular has a long tradition of winning, from the Steelers to the Penguins to, you know, their fascination and love for the culture of the city has always intrigued me. I will say that it's the most welcoming city I've ever lived in. I don't think people get a full picture of it, because it's not necessarily one of the large cities everybody thinks of, but I think when you get here, it's one of those places that grows on you. People have been very overwhelmingly polite, engaging. I've felt more embraced here than I have anywhere else. And so for me, it's one of those hidden gems. I kind of want to keep it that way, because if it becomes too big, you almost kind of lose some of that flair.
Yeah.
Every day, what I do is I lead a fantastic team of sales folks who are really responsible for driving Comcast Business in this market. We have some of the best products on the face of this earth. We provide data, voice, video services to small businesses all the way up to your large enterprises. We provide Ethernet grade services with dedicated fiber up with the, you know, symmetrical speeds up and down. We've got surveillance for your business. We have backup data services in case your business goes down because of an outage. I mean, this is the kind of things that our company is doing to continue to innovate in the technology space. And so my job every day is to equip those salespeople to go out and convince another great business owner that Comcast is a place to be. And the good news is every 15 seconds, somewhere across this great old United States, a customer is taking Comcast Business. So I'm really proud to say we're growing like gangbusters.
Yeah. So in terms of, kind of little research I was able to find on Comcast Business is these are small and medium-sized businesses.
Sure, yeah.
But really, like, this infrastructure layer that Comcast is providing is kind of across industries, across the board. Like, there
Absolutely.
Really isn't a specific vertical that this might serve. Everyone needs to be able to communicate.
Absolutely.
Everyone needs to be able to use the internet these days.
Absolutely. I mean, if you stop and think about it, the internet is kind of table stakes. The question is, how dynamic is that internet that you're using for your business? You know, for example, you could be a dry cleaners that's trying to reach all across a large metroplex. And so if you're trying to do that, you're going to need great, internet services that are going to reach those individuals. And you're going to need surveillance to make sure that your merchandise is safe inside your dry cleaners. And so we try to make sure that we have services that are dynamic and interesting that any customer can use. We have customers that are universities. We have customers that are their small local, tattoo parlor, for example, is a great customer. So we run the gamut on how our customers reach us. And frankly, what binds them all is just the simple fact that we have solutions that fit their business today and where their business is going.
And one of the big things just on the broad narratives of tech headlines in general has been security of data, security from hackers, Russians, wherever. Yes. How does Comcast think about something like that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's something that we take very, very seriously. I mean, obviously, we understand, you know, what's happened at companies like Target and some of the others. We know they have a fantastic team that works on those types of things. And we actually have a fantastic cybersecurity organization. As we continue to innovate, I certainly think that one of the things, you know, because we run the infrastructure that a lot of these companies use, we know that firewalls are good. We know that, you know, those are great ways to keep customer, you know, keeping all that sort of malware from entering your organization. But I have a feeling that eventually we're going to get into that space. I hope we do. I think it would make perfect sense. But from our vantage point, we believe that we have secure services that, you know, from our vantage point, it really does insulate the customers from a lot of that. And certainly if you put, you know, some services on top of that, you know, some malware prevention, I mean, that type of stuff will ensure that customers are pretty, very, very safe.
That's one of the things that I haven't quite figured out. And I don't know how much you can kind of push back on me on this, but like to me, a lot of the impetus for the security of your own stuff, like I feel like that has to kind of be a personal responsibility thing. Like, of course, if someone is saying that they're taking care of you and selling your stuff on the back end, I mean, that's unethical. That's something we need to deal with as like a legal system.
Yeah.
But more often than not, like, you know, I have this little thing that blocks the camera on my phone or on my laptop. Like I take my own necessary precautions. I have a VPN on my cell phone. And that to me is something that has kind of been lost. Like you kind of talk about the services on top, kind of been lost in this discussion of tech of like, well, you're making the choice to either trust or not trust this entity. You either are or not taking these steps to protect your data. Not to say that it's never the fault of the business, but there is kind of an interesting balance to strike there.
There definitely is an interesting balance to strike there. And I would even say, you know, for some businesses, it's definitely top of mind. So if you think about a restaurant or a coffee shop that has, you know, people sitting in their location that are surfing the internet, you know, that business owner may not be thinking about these folks could be, you know, putting all sorts of things on their network. You know, you look at the examples of even like a church, they might not even think about the fact that, you know, someone could be, you know, looking at what's going on inside of their church. You know, you never know what could be happening. So certainly I think it's always important as our company takes it very seriously. We're going to do everything in our part to ensure that our customers are well positioned. But ultimately, we do know that it does take two to tango, as I like to say, that, you know, the services are only going to be as good as how you use them and how you enable them. And we try to make sure that we educate customers on the front end of the risks of, you know, in any shape or fashion, you know, even beyond cybersecurity.
Absolutely. So the other kind of beat that I wanted to hit here before we wrap the conversation up is, you know, we talked about how big Comcast is, over 160,000 employees. And that's just something that, frankly, I don't have a lot of experience with. We have some clients who are of a similar size that we kind of interact as contractors for. But in terms of not only being inside such a large organization, but appearing to successfully navigate it and make things happen for yourself, what advice can you give about the, you know, sometimes it's derisively said like the, you know, politics or the internal games of such a large organization that would help someone early on in their career find the success that they're pursuing or do it in a way that is maximally fulfilling?
So, you know, I know for myself that in a large company like this, you can get lost in the shuffle. But at the same time, any large company or small company is a collection of individuals. And so to me, there's a couple things that I tell every person that I mentor along this line who's looking to navigate it all. First of all, understand the power centers. You know, there are certain people, it's not always the top person who is the most influential. Find those people that everybody counts on. Find the person everybody asks for advice. and align yourself with that individual. Find a few minutes to introduce yourself. Let them know what you do and why you do it. I tell people every time I speak to folks, I tell them I operate by the 60-40 split. I spend 60% of my time doing my job and the 40% of my time telling people about what I'm doing and why it's important. So that could be one-on-ones with my leader. That could be meeting someone new in the office that I haven't met and explaining what my role is and why I add value. I think a lot of folks don't get into the mental space of articulating why they exist and why they matter. And I think if folks take a little more time to do that, you'll build more advocacy. I believe that, you know, I don't believe that careers are linear. I think that it's about building advocacy with people who are in your line of control and those who are outside of it. And the more you can have more advocates around the table, the better. The other thing I would say that would be helpful to anybody trying to navigate, be genuine and authentic about, you know, what you want to do, and be genuine and authentic about what skills you do and don't have. I think very often we walk around as imposters, hoping that somebody will, you know, somehow see something great in us that we don't even see in ourselves.
Yeah.
So I often, you know, when I sit down with these advocates or leaders that I'm trying to engage with, I'm talking to them about, here's where Tony does well, here's where Tony's falling short, and here's what I need you to do to help me, you know, figure that out. And being clear with people about how they can help you. People love to rally to those who are very transparent about where they need help. So for me, it's being clear about what's working, what's not working, and asking them, you know, put them to work on your behalf. I think that, you know, that if you do those two things of building the right advocates and being clear about where you want to go and where your gaps are, I find that people will rally to your defense.
That 60-40 ratio they talk about is really interesting, because one of the things Hannah and I talk a lot about is this idea of we call it the practical personal brand. Really, it's a reputation is
what
we're talking about. And it's not something where it needs to skew all the way into where some of this personal branding goes, where it's like, I'm trying to be an icon or famous or thought leader, like all the way there. Sure, if you want to go that direction, you can. But really just having the reputation of so-and-so gets X done. They got Y done.
That's
they got Z done. So let's give them K, L, and M or whatever the letters
well,
that make sense.
And look, let's not kid ourselves. I know in my job every day, I lead a large group of people. To think that I'm going to know what everybody does and why they're valuable is just, it's a farce, right? So if my leaders don't tell me what they're good at and they don't remind me of why I'm grateful to have them there, it's very easy to get lost in the shovel. Everybody wants a soundbite. Mm-hmm. Everybody does. Every good leader wants to know, hey, you know, Mike is terrific at this. But guess what? It's up to Mike to remind me of what he's good at and how he can add more value to this organization. And I will say that solving for every organization has a gap. Every role that I've taken at this company, there was a gap that needed to be filled. Sometimes it's a physical gap because the leader's not there, or sometimes it is a process gap, or there's something that's missing in terms of how we work. There's a process issue. If you can solve issues, you are ripe for promotion, because everyone wants to know that you're going to help them make the organization better and you're going to anticipate where the business is going. Because guess what? Businesses change every day. Our competition changes every day. They get smarter every day. So I'm looking on my team, I'm looking for those people who understand where we're going, understand the gaps to how we're trying to get there, and who can solve the problem. If you can do that, I'll tell you, I'll take you every day. I really will.
So we talked about one side of the coin, which is, you know, get up to that 40%. Maybe you're only at 5, 10, 15.
Yeah.
What about the opposite side? Like, what's something that maybe puts your antenna up? It's like, this person's like spending 80% of their time just banging the drum and not actually going and putting the pedal to the metal.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You can go a little too far in the wrong direction, right? So to me, first of all, if the business is being neglected, I always say that, you know, you can be a great chorus of one, but it'd be better if you had a chorus of 100.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking beyond what the person is telling me. I'm looking for reinforcement around the people that either work for them or support them or partner with them. You know, if I hear Mike say to me, well, I'm the best at this, well, I'm going to go confirm that. Right. So I'm always looking to make sure that it's not just you, you know, sounding like a sound box, but really that the you know, to me, you know, perception is reality. People don't like to hear that. But, you know, you can't tell me that you're great and then everybody else is saying, oh, God, he's awful to work with. There has to be some level of symmetry between what you're saying and what they're saying. So for me, it's inspection. It's about asking for that 360 feedback. And we do that a lot at Comcast. We don't, you know, it's not just what Tony thinks of so-and-so. It's really about, I'm always asking my peers and other organization members that we partner with, what's your perception of so-and-so? How does he work? You know, what do you think he does well? What does he not do well? And if there's any gaps, that's when I'm looking to address it.
I like that notion of symmetry. I hadn't heard it said that way. That's good. Yeah. This has been fantastic, Tony. I'm going to want to aim towards wrapping up. Before we ask our standard last two questions, is there anything else you're hoping to share today that I didn't give you a chance to?
Well, first of all, I love what you're doing. I think you guys are doing amazing work. I'm really proud of what you're doing for the city of Pittsburgh. We need more young people. We need to keep young people here in this city who have a great perspective and idea, because frankly, I think this is a wonderful city to live in. And I think that it's on the cusp of being something that it's always dreamt of being, you know, hearkening back to the steel days, but doing it in a new way that's fresh with, you know, different industries and different, you know, incubators and, you know, new ideas coming to the table. So really proud of what you all have done here and are grateful to be a part of this.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. I know people are going to want to continue the conversation, learn more, connect in the digital world. What coordinates can we provide them if they want to learn more?
Well, first of all, if you want to learn more about Comcast Business, I would certainly go to www.business.comcast.com. It's just the source of all things. You can see all of our products and services. If you know a business owner who could use our services, please feel free to peruse that site for all the great things we do there. The other thing I would say is you want to connect with me particularly. I'm always on LinkedIn. It's www.linkedin.com/Tony Murphy. That's it, Tony, TONIMURPHY.
Beautiful. We're going to link that in the show notes. GoingDeepWithAaron.com/podcast is the place to find it for this and every episode of the show. Or you can just go in this little podcast app that you're listening to right now and scroll up or down an inch. But as we do at the end of each conversation, sure. Tony, I want to give you the mic one final time to issue an actionable personal challenge for the audience.
Yeah. So look, I recognize that we're living in a time where I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the fact that in our country environment, people are stressed. They're feeling disconnected. They are feeling like they can't reach the other side. They can't talk to people who are different than them. And the one thing I lead diversity and inclusion here at Comcast as well in my secondary capacity. And the one thing I tell every person to do is to go find one person and ask them and just simply say these words: I know I don't know as much as I should know about you. Tell me more. Because I think if we're going to get back to who we believe we are as a people, if we're going to do better at our companies and organizations, we don't know enough about each other. We really don't. I'm sure that even amongst the people that I lead, I don't know enough about them. So I try every day to find one person that I don't know very well and ask them that simple question. You will find things, you will glean out things about people you didn't understand. It'll make you a better leader. It'll make you a better citizen. It'll make you a better collaborator just by taking the time to listen. So that'd be my one call to action.
I love that. And you know, that question, like, I can see how that question's applicable for an acquaintance,
yes,
or a colleague, or these people that are kind of like in your network that you're not necessarily tightly
aligned
with.
It's helpful in my marriage. Craig, there's some things I don't know about you, right? It's applicable in any setting.
Yeah.
And I think the more we do that, you know, seeking out what we don't know, because we never will know the full extent of who you are as a person, who I am as a person. So seeking it out, we'll find more commonalities than we think. And even the differences that we do have, we will be better for it. We'll learn through it. So I absolutely recommend everyone do that. I'm going to make it a requirement they do that at the end of this podcast.
I was going to say, even in like the networking setting where you don't know everyone and they're strangers, like more
it
so than like,
easier.
So where do you work? Where do you go to school? What'd you major in? Like, that's actually, you're setting the table for someone to actually really deliver something about themselves.
Yes,
that's beautiful.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, this was a ton of fun. Thank you so much for coming
on
the podcast.
Thank you so much.
We just went deep with Tony Murphy. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. I sincerely hope you will check out goingdeepwithaaron.com/event to learn more about the Going Deep Summit. The Going Deep Summit is going to be March 23rd, 2019 in the city of Pittsburgh. We have a couple more speaker announcements and a location announcement coming very, very soon. So we hope that you'll check out the event. It's on Eventbrite if you want to get your tickets. You can RSVP to the Facebook event to see some updates. You can also head over to our YouTube channel where we'll be doing a bunch of more content on that front. We're super excited about it. The team has put a ton of time already into preparing for it, and we're
entering the home stretch here less than 4 months out from the big day. I'm super excited. I hope I will see you there. And I hope that you'll keep listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.